Hey y'all, it's Crystal.
And it's Samantha, and this is Serialholic Sisters.
True crime shit.
Wait for it.
Pepsi. What is that?
A nice brisk Pepsi at 8 o'clock at night.
Pepsi. That's vomitous.
It is. It has not tasted the same here lately.
I don't like Pepsi, but Chris and Tyler love Pepsi. Like, so there's always Pepsi in the house. I'm not into that vibe, but each their own.
I just needed the dramatic sound, that's all.
I like a nice cherry 7-Up, which you can't find everywhere.
Oh my god, I love cherry
7-Up. I love cherry 7-Up. It's so freaking good. And I like hardly ever drink carbonated stuff, but that I love.
Now I personally like, and it only comes out like around Christmas time, but the cranberry spice Sprite.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Oh my god, it's pretty good. It's one of my faves.
I like cranberry things.
I know. I really like it. One of the things that, so we have you already know, we have a hole in the wall type of little burger joint here.
Oh, try me.
Try me. And I say hole in the wall, but it's literally just a stop and go burger joint.
It's like a walk up window. You just walk up to the window and order, and then they just give it to you through the window.
But it's so good. Like
it is good. It's real good.
It's really good. They've got so many different things. Anyways. This season they have eggnog shakes. Okay. And I'm obsessed with them. They're one of my favorite things.
Nobody in my family likes eggnog but me, so I have a whole half gallon of eggnog in the fridge right now that I've got, and I've also got a whole bottle of spiced rum that needs to be mixed with it.
Nobody likes it but me either. Even Gunner, like Gunner usually likes everything, but he doesn't like it. So I love eggnog, and alcoholic eggnog is just bomb.
It's just mom. So this is a podcast about drinks.
You're welcome. Anyways, so let's just, you know, get into the point of the podcast. So this week my case is not like a murder case. I mean, it's true crime, but it's kind of an odd case. It's a unsolved case.
Okay.
Because for some reason I'm really on the unsolved.
You're on an unsolved kick.
I am. I've been doing a lot of them. But this one is actually one of the least understood crimes over the last 50 years.
One of the least understood crimes. So yes. It's super popular, right?
It actually has a name. It's called the Polaroid Mystery.
Okay.
So it is a mystery. I'm just going to say it's a very, there's literally zero explanation for it. So I'm just going to get into it.
I'm intrigued. When you said Polaroid mystery, I was thinking, okay, I may have an inkling of an idea, but maybe not. Like, I think I'm combining a lot of cases that just have Polaroids together in my head.
Oh, you mean like the last case that you did, the eyeball, where I'm like, oh, this is definitely on a TV show.
We're not doing a Criminal Minds episode this week.
No, it's really a strange case. So there's just no answers for it. Obviously there's going to be theories just like every case that's unsolved, but we're just going to go ahead and get right into it.
Okay, let's do it.
So Tara Calico, she was born on February 28th, 1969, okay, to two loving parents in New Mexico. She had a huge amount of friends, like tons of local family members that lived near her too. And she lived like a normal childhood, super normal, such a good kid, never did drugs. She was honestly like a very simple kid.
She was just like wholesome as fuck.
Yeah. Her friends always said that people were drawn to her bright and bubbly personality too. So like she was easy to get along with. She didn't have any enemies, nothing like that. She was athletic growing up and she loved the outdoors. Her favorite things to do were biking, hiking, and camping, which is not my forte, I guess.
You're like pass, hard pass.
I'm a glamper. A glamper. No, I love the outdoors. Don't get me wrong, but I just don't see why people jump to running and sleeping on the ground.
I'm a runner. I like running. So I get that. It's kind of basically like therapy to me, like running clears your mind. The camping thing. So I had a really awful experience back when I was in high school and super drunk. We went camping, got real drunk. Sorry, Mom. I got real drunk. It got real hot. So I opened the tent, but not just like, I didn't leave the netting part on there. So I just completely just opened.
So you just got ate up alive.
There was millions of mosquitoes in the tent when we woke up. So many mosquitoes. It was like a massacre. It was awful. It was awful. So yeah, I don't do camping anymore. That might be my fault. I don't care.
And that's my thing is I'll go camping in a camper.
Okay. With a TV and, no.
And a microwave. Don't ask me to start a motherfucking fire. No. I'm a glamper.
I do like the outdoors. The outdoors try to kill me. Mosquitoes attack me. Poison ivy. I'm deathly allergic to poison ivy. Like it's gotten in my throat, my eyes. It's awful. The last time I got it, I had it for like legit 2 months. I was on steroids for 2 months. It was awful.
Didn't you have like, what was it called? Like black poison ivy?
Black spot poison, like this rare poison ivy that you don't get anywhere. Black spot poison ivy. And I was like, what? How does this even happen? It was awful.
Yeah, I'm not allergic to poison ivy. So I feel really bad. It's awful for you because I'm not allergic. But if I've been around it, she's so deathly allergic. Like she'll catch it just from me being around it.
It is awful. Freaking nature tries to get me.
No, I love the outdoors, but I'm just not. Like if you want to go hiking or biking or fishing or hunting or anything like that, I don't mind going. But if you're going to ask me to put up a tent and sleep on the ground and, you know, around
not a bad bat girl
in the middle of nowhere where animals can just come up the tent at any time or creepy ass fucking serial killers, then, you know,
I literally like just invited a bear to come in. I just opened the tent and went to sleep.
You did. I bet everyone was so pissed off at you the next day.
Yeah, they were. I was like, my bad, y'all. There was a lot of alcohol involved.
Anywho. So she loved that stuff, right? She was 18 when she got into her first serious relationship. And her boyfriend and her weren't ones that like would go out to the movies or dinners or anything like that. Their typical date was actually like biking or walking trails or doing outdoor activities. So that's why they clicked so well. So on the morning of September 20th, 1988, things changed. So she woke up in a happy, she woke up. She woke up. She woke, man. I feel like every single episode I do, I always have the dumbest words come out.
They just fall out of your mouth.
I literally wrote it right too. And it just like falls out. Stupidity. Anyways, she woke up in a happy mood that morning. She was out of school. The weather was perfect. And she had decided like the day before that she was going to go on a 34-mile bike route that next morning.
You know, why not?
17 miles out and 17 miles back. I mean, literally, she's fucking crazy. I have trouble walking up the stairs.
I feel like that wouldn't be that bad on a bike, though. You're on a bike. Like, it wouldn't. No?
Legs of steel. That's all I have to say. Legs of steel. Anyways, her plan was to leave the house at roughly 9:30 in the morning and take the route that would oval around to meet back at her house and then like be back at her house by like noon.
Okay.
The trail she had, like, she's taken this trail many times. The way that the trail was, like, it went around like the golf course. It circled around in other neighborhoods that she was very familiar with. She'd taken it many times.
Okay. Yeah.
And she also had a lunch date that afternoon with her boyfriend at noon. Well, it was at 12:30. That's why she wanted to be at her house at noon.
She could like take a shower and be ready by 12:30. Is she supposed to meet him at 12:30? This is stressing me out.
Yeah, she was supposed to meet him at 12:30. So she was going to be back home by noon to meet her boyfriend at 12:30 for a lunch date. And then after their lunch date, they were going to go and play some tennis.
Okay. This day sounds exhausting.
I know. Like you're going on a 34-mile bike ride. You're going to go eat some lunch because you're starving to death for doing 34
right. You
miles.
Just burned all your calories. And then you're going to go play tennis and burn them all again.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Then you're going to burn it all again because you're going to play tennis right after eating. Like, this girl's got to be fucking fit as fuck.
I would throw up everywhere.
God, yeah, no. Like I said, I have trouble just walking up the stairs at work. I'm winded halfway through. I have to stop and take a break.
Thankfully, we don't have stairs in my work. So
I only have, it's literally only one floor up. We have an elevator, but I refuse to take it because I'm afraid that if I take it, one, people are going to make fun of me for going one floor up on an elevator.
Right.
And two,
I would.
my luck would be it would stop in the middle of the two floors and get stuck. So,
yeah, that happened to my husband. That's why he won't ride elevators. He got stuck in between floors.
I'm not a big fan of elevators either.
I mean, they don't bother me, but I was never stuck in one. So that's probably why.
Yeah. But I feel like if I got stuck in one, I'd be very claustrophobic and freak out. So just like
he opened the doors with his hands. He was so freaked out. He literally like hulked the doors open.
Adrenaline, man.
Yeah.
So anyways, this is why she planned to leave at 9:30 in the morning so that she could make it back in time to do all this. Like, she had it all planned out. She'd made the trail multiple times. So she knew how long it was going to take her to do this.
Okay.
Which to me, 9:30 to noon in a 34 mile bike ride, I feel like I could not do that. I'd take a lot of stops. Ride a block. Have to rest 5 minutes, write a block.
You ain't getting back at noon, girl.
No, maybe 8 o'clock at night.
You're going to, at one of your stops, you're going to call your boyfriend and be like, can we make it a dinner date?
Oh my God. So her boyfriend even called her that morning to check in and make sure everything was still on for that day and everything was normal. She's like, yep, we still have plans. We're going to do this. As she started to get ready to leave, she let her mother know the plan, just like every time she did right before she left. She's like, I'm going to do this trail. This is where I'm going to be. But this time it was a little bit off. There was one thing that stood out to her family that seemed super off that day. Tara told her mother right before leaving in a joking way. Mm-hmm. She said, if I'm not back by noon, come look for me.
Oh, foreshadowing.
Yeah. And it was meant to be more of like a funny joke.
Right.
You know, like play like banter.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, mom, if I'm not back by noon, you know, come look for me. But the reason it was off to them is just because of what happens later this day.
Right. Right. She could have said that every time that she went out, like, oh, if I'm not back by this time, come look for me.
Right. But she didn't. And that's why it was so off to her. Of course, her mom was just like, okay, I'll come look for you, like joking around.
Right.
Well, noon came and went and Tara hadn't made it home. And it wasn't like Tara to arrive late or not show up when she was supposed to show up. Like, she would at least make a phone call or something, which I know there's not cell phones back then, but she would have stopped and made a phone call at a friend's house or
found a payphone, something.
Right. And once it hit 12:30, Tara's mom started getting super worried because she was now 30 minutes late, which is literally not like her. So because it really bothered her, she decided that she was going to just go get in her car and track her trail.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm going to go check on her, make sure, you know, she's not off in a ditch or something, you know.
Right. Make sure she doesn't have like a flat tire on her bike and she's just stuck on the side of the road, anything like that.
Right.
Right.
Well, 1 p.m. approached and Tara had missed her lunch in tennis date with her boyfriend. So, of course, she's not only freaking out, but her boyfriend's starting to freak out because it's unlike Tara to not call him and tell him if something changed.
Right. And they had just verified plans that morning.
Yes. So her mother continued to circle around the route and she decided to start checking around the area's ditches to make sure that, like, she didn't have an accident.
Right.
And just like you said, make sure she didn't have a flat tire because Tara was having some issues with her bike the week prior. The chain had some issues. She had just had a tune up on her bike and she just was afraid maybe that might be why.
Right.
But unfortunately, what she found was not Tara stuck but more of a mortifying item for her. She found a Boston cassette tape on the side of the road. It was Tara's. So every time Tara would take a bike trip or a hiking trip or anything outdoors where she was going to go on a trail, she always carried a bottle of water, a helmet, and her Walkman. And that morning, before she had left, she had all those items, including a Boston cassette tape, in her player.
So it was just the tape, not the player or anything else.
It was just the tape. Her mother instantly knew it was hers.
Right.
So she immediately called the police.
That makes me think, like, if she was taken or, like, abducted, kidnapped, that makes me think that she left it behind as a clue.
That's exactly what she did.
Okay. Okay, girl.
Exactly what she did. At least that's what her mother believes, too.
Okay.
So she immediately called the police, and police started investigating the area and questioning neighbors. But like most investigations, especially involving teenagers, she was only 19 at the time. They believe that she had, I know.
A runaway. She's a runaway.
Well, no, they actually believe that she had maybe stopped at a friend's house and just forgot to tell her mom because she was,
oh my gosh, you know,
19 years old and she hadn't been missing for more than an hour.
Right, right.
So they're like, this isn't a missing persons case, lady. She was late. She's late an hour. Like, you're calling us when she was supposed to be home an hour ago.
I get that, but it's also very frustrating when like you're the parent and you know that it's super unlike them and something's wrong.
Which is exactly what my next sentence, I actually wrote that too, because a mother's instinct always overrides, you know, right. Your mother knows you best. I know if I tell, and this is a prime example. I know if I tell Aiden, I want you home by 10 o'clock in the morning. He's going to come home 30 minutes early.
Okay.
That's just how he is. He's responsible. Like he's like, if mom wants me home by 10, I feel like she really means 9:30.
Okay.
Now I know if I tell Gunner, you need to be home by 10. Gunner's going to be home at 10:05.
That's fair. That sounds right.
And he's going to come home through the door panting like he just ran a mile. Which granted, let me make things very clear. I don't let my kids just like go roam the roads or anything here. Even though I live in a small town, the only place that Gunner can go is across the street.
Right.
So if he's 5 minutes late from literally across the street from me, there's a problem. And I mean, Aiden.
But you know it's going to happen.
Yeah. And Aiden, I mean, he's more responsible, but it's the same way. He's like a block away if he ever goes anywhere.
Right.
So like mother's instinct, she continued to put up a fight with the police to keep searching for Tara because it wasn't like her to be late. And it was weird to find a cassette tape on the side of the road that was hers.
Right.
Even all the neighbors that were interviewed said the same thing as her mother too. They were all like, oh no, she's dependable. She's never late. She's always on time. If she's going to be late, she's going to call you. She'll find a way. Like, she does not want her parents or anybody to panic.
Right.
And her boyfriend said, it's not like her to stand me up, like, or not show up. So go find her.
Somebody please go find her. And they're just like, sorry, it's not a missing person yet. So we can't.
Yeah. So they were like, because there wasn't any sounds of foul play or any evidence proving this was really a missing person, they were like, I'm sorry, but I mean, this isn't really a missing persons report. So we'll just do like a sweep around the area and check one more time. But I mean, if she doesn't turn up in 24 hours, then let us know. So while the police did their last sweep around the area, a policeman spotted a pink Huffy bike and a Walkman in a ditch 20 miles from Tara's home.
Oh no. She was only supposed to be going 17 miles away.
Yeah. So because they located these items miles, like literally miles away from the tape too, that Tara's mom had found, it was noted that she had to have been kidnapped and taken either where her bike was left or actually taken where the tape was thrown out and the bike was thrown out to throw off the trail instead.
I was gonna say, I wonder if she
noticed it out the window.
Well, I was gonna say, I wonder if she noticed somebody following her, like while she's on the bike, she notices a car like slowly following her, throws the tape down because they keep getting close, and keeps going past where she was gonna go.
And maybe throws her bike and Walkman down to run.
Maybe, or maybe that's where they finally stop and get out and abduct her.
Well, unfortunately, there wasn't any evidence left behind but these items.
Mm-hmm.
There was no blood. There was no, like, any foul play looking evidence, nothing, no trash, nothing around. It was literally a bike and her Walkman just in the ditch. So several people in the area, when they were questioned by police, did confirm that they saw a 1953 Ford F-150.
Following
Tara a few miles from her house. It had an attached camper shell. It wasn't something that was in the area ever.
So they could have grabbed her, thrown the bike in the back, and then drove a little bit and then thrown the bike out.
Yes. So many questions, right?
Right.
But nobody felt it was important at the time because Tara seemed unbothered when she was biking. So they weren't sure if maybe she knew the person and was just ignoring them or something, or maybe she didn't know that somebody was behind her because she had her headphones on.
Right.
Or maybe while she was biking and the person was behind her, she didn't realize they were there. And so she didn't move over far enough for them to pass her, was what people were saying too. So okay. he just kind of hovered, like the truck hovered, but they didn't think that it was super odd. Now, for me, I feel like if you know what year and type of
like if you is, right, if you took the time to
it was odd enough.
Right. If you took time to note the make and model of unless the vehicle.
Unless they were those like crazy Karen like circle people like in the Cove that are like, oh, I don't know this person. Better do you know anybody that drives a 1953 Ford F-150?
That's not where I thought you were going. I thought you were going towards like maybe if they're like a crazy car enthusiast, then they would know the make and the model.
No, definitely didn't. No, that probably would have sounded better than what I said. But okay. But no. So police started searching for the description of the vehicle, but they came up empty-handed from the area. There was plenty of 1953 Ford F-150s, but everyone they checked out didn't have a camper shell or anything like that.
Those are easily detachable. Also, if you paid attention to the year of the car and like what it was, can you not have like grabbed a license plate number?
That's what I was thinking too. When I was doing research on this, I was like, they were able to tell you the motherfucking year, but they couldn't tell you Foxtrot Alpha 123. Like they couldn't just fucking write down a goddamn license plate.
Right.
Her case was actually cold for almost a year.
That's super frustrating and sad for the mom and everybody.
Right. But it's really weird that I say that it was cold for almost a year, right? Because at the beginning I said it was a cold case still. Well, in June 1989, in Port St. Joe, Florida, which was 1,600 miles away from New Mexico, a woman walked up to an object in a grocery store parking lot that, like, caught her eye.
I do vaguely remember this one now.
It was a single Polaroid photo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the photo wasn't just a normal photo. Maybe somebody dropped like a picture of her and her boyfriend or something like that.
Right.
No, instead, this photo was a photo of a young teenage woman and a young boy around 10 years old. Both of them had black tape on their mouths and their arms were bound.
Mm-hmm.
She was wearing a t-shirt and biking shorts and had long dark hair tied back. They looked to be laying on a cot of some sort with a book next to her titled My Sweet Andrea, which was written by one of her favorite authors.
By Tara Calico's favorite authors?
Yes.
Okay.
Tara Calico's favorite authors. And it was even noted that this book was one that Tara had owned, but they couldn't locate it anywhere.
Okay.
And there was other trash-like objects around him. It also stood out that there seemed to be a little door that looked like it could maybe be that of a camper or a van of some sort due to the handle and the space that they were in.
Mm-hmm.
So witnesses in the area stated that a white Toyota Caravan had been in that area that morning.
I'm pulling up the Polaroid to look at again because I've looked at it before.
Yes. So the driver looked to be in his 30s with a thick handlebar mustache.
Oh.
And all I can think of is like in the Western movies where they have these really big handlebar mustaches that like point out and they're always
More of like a biker.
Or Yosemite Sam.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's accurate, yes.
Yeah. So anyways, again, though, the trail went cold. They couldn't find the caravan anywhere in the area, and they couldn't find a 30-year-old male driving a caravan that had a thick handlebar.
That had a handlebar mustache.
Yeah.
Which, again, shave that shit off. You could detach a camper, you can shave the mustache off.
Right. Well, after reviewing the photograph, police and others confirmed that it was, well, still believed,
right,
that it was in fact Tara. But who was the boy? So investigators had another cold case they were investigating of a little boy named Michael Henley.
Mm-hmm.
He went missing April of 1988 in New Mexico as well. And he had been camping with his family when he had supposedly wandered off and never returned to the campsite.
Don't wander children.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, in 1990, so this Polaroid was found in 1989, mm-hmm. so just another year later, Michael's remains were found near the area the family had been camping. It was determined that he had died from exposure to the elements being lost in the woods.
That's so sad, but also that means that was not him in the Polaroid.
Or so they say, because he was decomposed to the point where, I mean, the only explanation, animals, all that stuff in the woods, was exposure to the elements. So because of this, investigators started to doubt both people that were in the Polaroid, saying mm-hmm. that they, obviously it had to be somebody else, because if this little boy was found, 1992, so, you know, forensic evidence is completely different these days.
Yes, for sure.
So yeah, they started doubting it. Well, two more Polaroids would be found over the next few years.
Okay.
One was in California, and it showed a blurry image of a girl's face covering her mouth. And then the second was a woman bound in gauze with a male on an Amtrak train. And this one was actually kind of disturbing. The guy in the photo with the girl was smirking and not tied up like her. In fact, he was holding her, which was super creepy, almost like he was forcing this crazy picture with her all bound up.
That's creepy. Also, she's on a train and she's bound and nobody notices.
That's what I'm saying, man. That's okay. What I'm saying. But unfortunately, again, the trail went cold. I mean, all they have are these Polaroid photos.
Right.
There's no evidence of where they're at. There's no evidence of where they could be. Who's to know when the Polaroids were taken?
Right.
Like, there just wasn't any new developed evidence for this case at all.
That's so frustrating.
It also still remains a mystery, and Tara's body has still never been found. So, is she alive? Was it really her in the photos? There's so many speculations.
Right.
Well, here's one of the theories. So, I mean, there's several, right? One of the theories was she was kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
She has been kept alive, and a form of torture to the family or to anybody is the guy's purposely leaving Polaroids of her in random places to never be found. He wants to be caught, but doesn't want to be caught.
Right.
Another theory, well, it wasn't even a theory. It was actually kind of a confession. So in November 2013, there was a dying confession from a witness.
A witness to what?
To the kidnapping.
Okay. Sorry. Okay.
A witness to the kidnapping, saying that they knew three men to have been involved in her disappearance and that her body was thrown into a pond.
Oh.
Nearby the trail that she was taken.
I'm sorry, you saw her get taken and thrown into a pond?
It was a dying confession. Police went to go and look into this.
I was gonna say, did they go search the pond?
They did.
Okay.
They actually searched it multiple times and any evidence around the pond as well.
Right.
And it looked like this lead was actually false. So this person was a fucking crazy douchebag.
Frustrating that it leaves the investigation way off course and wastes everybody's time.
Not just time, but resources. It wastes so much. It's
so much time that could be spent actually looking in the right places, you know.
But I mean, I also get like, yes, it's fucking annoying. But when I say it wastes resources, in all reality, they couldn't use any of the resources anywhere at this time because they had no evidence.
But like, if you don't actually know anything about a case, then don't fucking say, "Oh, I know, I saw this." Like, what?
Right.
Why would you do that? Why?
Right. So another theory was that when she was kidnapped, when she was taken, she did in fact throw the cassette tape out the window to lead her mother in the actual direction.
That was my theory. I came up with that.
Okay. To lead her in the actual direction to show her that, you know, this is where I was taken.
Right.
Come find me.
It's so heartbreaking.
I know. Then there was one other theory that I seen, and that theory was that people were speculating that she was tired of living her day-to-day life.
Nope.
Yeah, I know. I don't believe it either.
Don't believe it.
She was tired of living her day-to-day life and she wanted a more exciting life. So instead of trying to live this more exciting life openly, she ran away.
Mm-mm.
But she knew the person that was in the truck and they ran away together.
That's really far-fetched.
I know.
That's like super far-fetched.
I hate people.
Okay. Like if everybody in her life describes her as this happy, bubbly, like super reliable, always calling her mother with an update, like, "Hey, I'm going to do this. I'll be here at this time. This is the way I'm going." Like, right. Why would she do that if she was planning on running away with some mystery man and starting a life?
Also, why would you tell your mother that you're going to go on a 34-mile bike ride, like to and from total, and tell you exactly where I'm going?
Right. That's what I'm saying.
And then also say, "Hey, if you can't find me, then, or if I'm not home by this time, then, you know, come check on me." Doesn't sound like somebody that's going to run away.
I don't like that theory. I call bullshit. Yeah.
So unfortunately, this is exactly where the case has been left. And it's still left to this day, exactly there. There is no evidence. There has not been any other Polaroids that have been left behind or found. And unfortunately, we still to this day don't know if she's alive or dead. And sadly, in 2002, Tara's father passed away without answers. And just a few years later, in 2006, Patty, Tara's mother, also passed away.
That's so heartbreaking.
So not only did they both pass away before this so-called dying confession from the witness, too.
They passed away before that?
Yeah, because that happened in 2013.
Good.
But they also,
I mean, good. That was an awful way to say that.
No, it is awful, but I get exactly what you mean. Like, I'm so glad they didn't have to put up with the hope.
Like, they didn't have their hopes. Person. Right, exactly. Their hopes lifted, thinking, "Oh, we might actually, like, find her body and be able to lay her to rest."
No, but
all for it to be bullshit.
But at the same time, they died without any answers.
I know. That's, which is a bummer. Thanks.
I know. It's so sad. So, that's literally where the case lies. It is a cold case. Again, it's one of the largest unknown mysteries in the last 50 years.
That's crazy. I feel so bad for like her parents. I cannot imagine my child just disappearing without a trace, basically, and there being no leads, nothing even close. And then you just spend your entire rest of your life looking for them and never find any answers.
It reminds me of that case where the parent, like the house burned down and the parents didn't, there was no trace of the kids in the
Sauter kids.
Yes.
That's so funny that you mentioned that. It's not funny, but I was absolutely debating on covering that one because it happened on Christmas Day. And it, I know. It's Christmas. And so I almost did that one next week, but I changed my mind.
But they also, I mean, I hate to be the spoiler, but they also died before they ever.
They did. Yeah. Yeah.
Learned the truth about it.
Same thing. The kids just like disappeared without trace. Multiple kids.
Multiple.
Like that one's crazy. I will cover it at some point, but not now.
There is the unknown cold case of the Polaroid mystery of Tara Calico.
I do remember that there's lots of people that don't think that's her in the Polaroids.
A lot of people don't.
A lot of people don't think
it's her.
There
are some just, it's kind of hard because Polaroid pictures.
Also, it's hard because in pictures that you have to compare to, she's like smiling and just like posing for a picture. And this is a person in these pictures that is like terrified and bound and duct taped on the mouth. And like, it's not going to look the same as somebody posing and smiling for a picture. Like, I remember there was comparisons of like people like, oh, well, her eyebrows are arched in this picture when she's smiling, but in this one, they're flat and straight.
Well, that's exactly what I was about to say.
Got a different demeanor happening.
Well, and it's not just that. It's really hard to determine if that's a picture of her too, because there was no distinct marks on her body in the Polaroid. Like, mm-hmm. No scar. There's not really scars or bruises.
Right, which
not any scars or
bruises are not distinct.
They're not.
I know they come and go.
That's not what I'm trying to say. But there's not,
especially on me. I bruise like a peach.
There wasn't any scar. I meant to say birthmarks.
There you go. But that also starts with a B. Yes.
Yes, it does.
Words are hard. Okay.
So hard. Anyways, there wasn't anything that you could really determine. The only way that they were like, oh no, that's Tara's, because the dark hair,
mm-hmm.
the body type, she right. was slender. She was around that age,
mm-hmm.
and the book stood out for them.
Book stood out. It's something that she was into. And also, I feel like I remember hearing that her mother was like, yes, that's absolutely her. And I'm going to trust what the mother says. If they see a picture of their kid, they're going to know it.
That's exactly what it was. So her mom's the one like, yeah, that's her. You know, that's one of her. That's a book from our favorite author. There's like all this stuff. So that's
also,
why
the book is really weird. That's really weird. Like, is the captor just like keeping her and like
my sweet Andrea
giving her like, why is there a book? Is she like telling him, oh, I like this author, and he brings her books? Like what's happening? This is all very,
I don't know.
And also, she's bound. How can she read the book?
It was actually stated when the boy's body was found and everyone thought that it was it wasn't them. They also started saying that they thought that it was staged. Okay. Like this was just a staged photo.
Right.
For people to like say it
I
was.
I guess that goes in with the theory of she wanted to start a new life. Like mm-hmm. this could have been a staged photo to show that, oh, she really was kidnapped and still out there. Like,
yeah, there was no way. Like that was the thing is, you can put a picture of her up against a picture of this Polaroid and you can see some distinct, you know, features that mm-hmm. could be her, but you just mm-hmm. don't know. And that's just it. Like a lot of it is covered up. A lot of her face is covered up from this right. stuff. She's bound. You can't see her hands. You can't see all of her legs. You can't see what shoes she's wearing, which is something that a lot of people look for, you know, or if she's even wearing shoes or anything. Like you can't see that
right.
in this photo. And we'll show the photo on the Instagram, but we'll also show the creepy photo, the Amtrak train photo.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We'll definitely show both
because
those
I want
the Instagram.
Hear, did I say the Instagram?
You said,
like that?
You said on the Instagram.
My bad.
Because you're 80.
Because I'm an 80-year-old woman. But we'll show the pictures because I want to hear, like, I'm really curious to hear some of you guys' thoughts on this creepy picture, because the girl to me does not look like her. Okay. It looks like another person that we should be concerned about.
Right. So we'll definitely post pictures of her and then the Polaroid pictures for sure. This is one of those cases, you know, there's always those cases where everybody's like, oh, this is the one thing that I wish I knew the truth to. Like a lot of people like JonBenet Ramsey, Dahlia, like all these people know what actually happened to these people. I want to know what happened to Tara Calico. Like, there's no trace. Like, it's
none. And that's,
I want to know what happened.
I know. This is exactly why I did this case too, because it's not like the typical, they find evidence and we feel like it should be this person. Mm-hmm. There's literally,
there's nothing.
It's like Jack the Ripper all over where everyone's also, like.
It's very odd to me that nobody recognizes the guy in the creepy Polaroid. Because his face.
Right?
He is completely like all out there. Like his face. He's like, here's my face. Shown.
I feel like we should have seen an arrest on that dude for sure. Like, okay.
Okay.
I can't wait to show this picture just because I mean, I'm very worried for this girl.
Right. Like, but there's no way to tell in this picture who the girl is. You can't even see her face at all.
No, her face is really covered. Like, her face is pointed towards the guy more. But it looks like she's like wearing glasses. It's like pointed
up towards the ceiling. It does look like she's wearing glasses, yes. And her face is pointed up towards the ceiling. It almost looks like he's, like, pulling her head back, like, by the hair or something like that.
Yes. Yes.
But his face is clear. Like, it's just all of his face in the picture.
He's just like, here's me. I'm a fucking douchebag. That needs to be arrested.
Yes, that is what he said. Well, that's frustrating. Thanks for that.
Yeah, fucking Brussels sprout.
Brussels sprout. Oh, that's not fair. I like Brussels sprouts. If you season them right, they're quite delicious.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I don't want to compare this guy to something so tasty, you know?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Like, we can call him like a fucking tomato because those are just vomitous.
But I like tomatoes.
I don't know what we both don't like.
A little bit of salt, a little bit of pepper. Gross. Anyways.
He's a fucking tofu. He's tofu, is what he is.
Yeah, nobody likes that shit. I mean, if you openly like tofu,
I mean, people say if you like cook it right, then it's good, but I have not been able to cook it right. So I don't know.
I'm sorry. You enjoy eating kitchen sponges.
It's the texture. Like, that is the consistency. Like, what? Who likes that?
I'm good. Thank you.
I am quite all right.
Now,
if it's a sponge cake.
Now.
Now we're talking. No.
But I will say, I shouldn't hate on it because it is specific people's culture and their cultural foods, but I just don't like tofu personally.
I'm just not a tofu person. If you like tofu, have at it, because I don't want it.
Yeah, no, I don't. You can have it all. And I don't like sponge cake either. What's wrong with you?
I don't know. I don't think I do either. I just like,
why are we talking about food?
We started with drinks, we're ending with food.
Okay, well, here we go. That was the case. Let's follow us on the stuff for more recipes.
For more recipes, go to SerialHolicSisters.com. We're so dumb. Okay. We should probably end this before it gets dumber.
Yeah, let's be awkward.
We've already done that.
Okay. Okay, bye.
Bye.